It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast, presented by McKinney and BetMGM. I'm Mike Stevens. This is Ryan Kennedy. We've seen a lot of each other lately, Ryan.
We have.
We just got back from the All-Star, weekend week. Ton of fun, I think. There was definitely some hit and misses from the NHL side. But before we get into any of that, let's talk about a giant bomb that dropped basically right when we got back. I believe it happened on Sunday. I'm recording this on Tuesday morning, as I usually do. Is Bo Horvat.
Yeah,
he got the extension that we all kind of were thinking, and the Islanders were really selling him on 8 years, $8.5 million per. None of it is signing bonus money, which is extremely interesting. Makes it easier to buy out, which is love talking about a league where giant contracts happen, and one of the perks is but you can buy it out.
Right,
love that.
Already thinking of it.
Exactly. He has now played one game with the team. We're like, but if they buy him out, it's easy.
And they're undefeated.
And they are undefeated, yes. He did, unfortunately for my fantasy team, he did get held pointless. But, it's fine. So let's talk about that real quick. I mean, look, by now, everyone has really kind of talked it to death, so we don't need to go too deep into it. But, it's a big deal. They traded a decent chunk for him at the deadline. They get him, and before he even plays a game with the team, they lock him in for the maximum term at $8.5 million a year. You have been banging the drum on the Bo Horvat extension, what your thoughts were going to be. At one point, you said he could get close to John Tavares money. Mm. That didn't necessarily happen, but on the last podcast, I'm giving you the credit for this, you did come very close. So revel in your rightness.
I'm going to marinate. Yeah, I think I said nine.
Yeah.
And you got 8.5 because you're not going to make more than Matt Barzal.
And he makes 9.15.
Star. But 8 years, it's funny. I don't mind the contract.
I don't either.
I think Bo Horvat's the kind of player that's going to age pretty well, where, even if he's not a top-end goal scorer for you in the latter years of the contract, he's the kind of two-way player that's going to give you value in the middle six of your lineup when he gets into his 30s, or worst-case scenario, I suppose. So, I don't mind it. And we know the cap's going to go up eventually.
Yes.
So 8.5 in 3 or 4 years is going to mean a lot different than 8.5 next year.
Yes. And first of all, we forget that in this sort of, in the immediacy of this, They managed to convince Vancouver to retain 25% of the salary.
There you go.
So they have him for I believe it's 4.125 for the rest of the year, which means they do have almost basically $2 million in cap space left over. They can go get someone else at the deadline if they want.
Yeah.
I think that, Bo Horvat, we've talked to death about how attractive he is as a man, but also as a hockey player, just in the fact that he's on pace for 55 to 60 goals this year. That he was a team captain and managed to keep a lid on, as we see, one of the most, chaotic situations possibly in pro sports.
Possibly.
I mean, the Brooklyn Nets and Kyrie Irving.
I was going to say non-Kyrie Irving.
Exactly.
Edition.
But he's great two way. He's a great two way forward. He's a remarkably efficient scorer because yes, he's on a shooting heater. I believe it's 25% he's shooting this year. But his career average is 16.
Yeah.
So it's not like a guy's going from shooting 9 for his career to 40. We've seen that happen before. I was talking about this on Staff and Graph, another one of our lovely podcasts, in that, I think last season, what we saw with Bo Horvat, where he had, I believe it was 31 goals, 61 points, I think that's sort of what you can expect from him now. Now, especially surrounded with these players, freed from the chaos, freed from the burden of being, the leader,
right.
And having to essentially be play a mediator role in the locker room, or be a conduit between crazy, GMs and whatnot. I think that even worst case, if that's his baseline for the rest of the contract, I mean, you're getting a 27-year-old guy who's going to give you 30 points, 30 goals, 60, 65 points a season. Locked in there for 8 years. He's 27 too. He's not a huge veteran. He's 27. Yeah. He's in the middle of his prime for $8.5 million a year for a top six center, 27 years old, perennial 30 goal scorer, we'll call him now.
Sure.
And a, you know, 60, 65, maybe, you know, he gets some great power play production, brings up to 75 for $8.5 million. That's not bad. That's not shabby.
I'm not mad at it.
I'm not mad at it either. So I think our verdict is it's a good deal.
I think so.
Right now, I think it's a good deal. Yeah. Fantastic. All right. Moving on. Look, this is, I think with the All-Star game and the All-Star weekend in our rearview mirror, I think we're now starting to look at the stretch run.
Indeed.
Like this is where you know the butts clench, and this is where you know everyone just gets ready to rock. We're gearing up for playoff time, and while the East is relatively like the Bruins are far and away at the top, it seems like they pretty much locked down that spot, pretty much locked down the President's Trophy at this point.
Yeah,
there are also a lot of really close, not just wild card, but just in terms of divisional races. But let's talk about the wild cards first. Who do you think comes out victorious in the wild card race in the Eastern Conference, and then we'll go to the Western Conference after?
Yes. So, you know, you're looking at, well, a number of teams, Washington, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Florida, I would say. Islanders as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, toss them in that mix. I feel like even though Washington has played 53 games, which is several more than some of the other contenders there, mm-hmm. I kind of feel like I'd rather have the points than hope to get the points,
yes.
If that makes sense.
You want to have, yeah.
You know, like they've already...
You got sure thing.
Yeah, it's done. It's in the books. You know, this is a team that has been there before. Obviously, getting Backstrom back was massive for them. We didn't even know if that was going to happen this year.
And they made two big signings, Dylan Strome and Sonny Milano.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. So I think Washington is pretty solid. Mm-hmm. And then... I'm going to go with Buffalo for my second because they're hot right now, which helps. A lot of the teams in that mixture are kind of like 4-5-1 in their last 10. Buffalo, I think, is 6-2-2 or something to that effect. I like the momentum. I like that this is a group that ended strong last year.
Yes.
You know, didn't have anything to play for last year, but I like this group under Don Granato. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there's so much potential. We're seeing, you know, Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power leading that D-core. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully Tage Thompson can make, you know, he missed the All-Star break with an injury, or the All-Star game, I should say. But hopefully, you know, he gets on, you know, gets back on track very quickly for mm-hmm. them. And the fact that they are in the Atlantic Division, you know, they're going to have games against the Habs and the Wings and the Senators, which might be a little bit easier than some of the Metro foes, although, you know, there are some bottom feeders there as well. But I feel like this is like Buffalo's year to break through. Mm. And I think they know that, and I think it's going to propel them.
I could not agree with you more. I think the Sabres, they got something cooking. Mm-hmm. They really, there are some incredible vibes around that team. We've talked about how, you know, Don Granato is the coach for that team. He is doing a phenomenal job of just like ushering that group in. He played, you know, fireman in the first time where he had to sort of put out that fire when he got in.
Yep.
But ever since then, he's just been ushering them. It's been perfect. I think the Sabres, absolutely. It's tough. It really is tough to root against the Caps just because they, you know, first of all, they have the points. And you know, you got like Ovi and you know, it seems like to be fair though, when I watched them play Toronto and I've kept an eye on them ever since, like, and I've said this before, and keep in mind, I cover the Leafs, so I would know my way around something like this. Mm. They are a team that seems just built for a first round exit. Like this is a team, and I'm gonna you know, show my age by using this term. They are very mid. You know, and they just like, unless Ovi is in Super Saiyan mode, basically, like, this is a team that just is not very good at 5-on-5. Mm. You know, it's not great. I will never bet against Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang and Ricard Raquel and Jake Gensel and all. Like, I think the Penguins hop the Capitals there. I think it's just, I can't imagine a world where Sidney Crosby doesn't make the playoffs. And he's having an incredible year this year, as he always does. He's one of the best, if not the best player. Like, obviously he's not, you know, Connor McDavid, but he is a legend in the game.
Yeah.
And I think that he's the kind of guy who, now that the games are even tighter, and now that, you know, like, the potential for him to not make the playoffs is actually creeping up. He just puts up one of his, like, 2 points per game stretches down the final, like, 30 games of the season, and you're good to go. I'm going to take the Sabres, and I'm going to take the Penguins.
All right. And I will say, during All-Star Weekend, I thought Crosby was, like, had a great vibe about him the whole time.
He did.
Yeah.
Someone who did not have a great vibe around him is Kirill Kaprizov. And that brings us to the Western Conference, where it's pretty bunched up in the Central Division. Like, you got the Stars and the Jets. They're at 68 and 65 points respectively. And then you go down and you have the Wild, the Avalanche, and the Predators at 58, 57, and 54. Mm-hmm. That's pretty bunched up. Who do you think comes out of that group? If we're gonna assume that, you know, let's say like that one of those teams is gonna grab that wild card spot, who out of those three do you have faith in?
I mean, I think it's gonna be Colorado.
Yes,
they're healthy again, and
they're getting Nichushkin and Byron back, I believe, tonight.
That's
huge. That just injects like a top four defenseman and a top six winger, right?
Yeah,
right,
exactly. And I mean, Nichushkin, we saw how valuable he was during the playoffs last year, mm-hmm. when they won the Stanley Cup, and they're starting to roll. I think they've won 7 of their past mm-hmm. 10. So I think, you know, Colorado, the reason they were flailing, like, it was all obvious reasons. It was mm-hmm. injuries. So now they're getting healthy. I think they're going to take care of business. What I'm most interested in terms of the wild card, so, you know, put Colorado in one of those spots, is Vegas, Edmonton, Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Mark Stone, once again, out for Vegas. That's a really tough pill to swallow if you're the Golden Knights. And they're already struggling. I think they've only won 2 of their past 10.
They are flailing right now.
They're flailing. So what I'm thinking is that Edmonton probably moves up, takes that third seed in the Pacific, and then I think Calgary gets the wild card. I think Vegas might drop out.
You think so? You think Vegas might not make the playoffs again?
I think it's possible. There's those injuries, that's tough.
Those injuries are tough. Here's the thing, though. I have zero faith in the Calgary Flames. That is,
and I understand that. So that would be would be the other option, is that Calgary misses,
which would be a disaster and lead to some like legit changes in that organization, I think.
Maybe it's tough, though. I mean, you think about the fact that their two best players were like, we don't want to be here.
Yeah, then they got a bunch of really good players back.
They did, yeah. But I mean, it's. That upsets chemistry, obviously. You got to take time to, you know, figure things out.
I mean,
out.
You know what else upsets chemistry is Jacob Markstrom turning into a goaltender who is barely NHL level, if
and
under that.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, you can't predict. A guy going from, you know, Vezina level to, like, replacement level.
You can't predict it as, say, the Bo Horvat contract as you did, you know. Not everyone's got that vision.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I think Bradshaw Living's done an incredible job there. So if they miss because of goaltending, then I think you got to
just
like,
chalk it up.
You know, like, look, what are you going to do? Like, you got to address it in the summer, obviously, but it wasn't expected.
If the Edmonton Oilers miss the playoffs, like, that's with the seasons that McDavid and Draisaitl are having, that would be one of the most insane events we've ever seen. I don't think that'll happen. Like,
I don't think either, because Stuart Skinner has been that guy for them in net.
And also, like, they have Matt Berlin too, the e-bug. He's great.
There you go.
But like what I said with Pittsburgh and Crosby, like, I just don't see McDavid like looking at this. I just see McDavid looking at this being like, yeah, no, we're gonna make the playoffs.
Right.
I'm gonna score like 3 points a game.
Yeah.
I'm gonna score like 90 points down the final 30 games.
Yeah.
Like I said, I do not have faith in the Calgary Flames. There is something broken about that team right now. Like, they. Mm. And if you looked at the game, but the game between the Flames and the Rangers last night, one of the best games of the year.
But
they ended up losing that game in overtime. And if you look at the body language after that loss, and again, I don't want to be body language doctor, I don't want to be that guy, eye test, whatever. But like, that was a team that was just like so deflated after that loss. Mm. Markstrom immediately broke the crap out of his stick after he got scored on. Like, it just doesn't, things don't seem right there. Mm. Now with Vegas, obviously they're flailing. They have Mark Stone out for potentially the rest of the season. Jack Eichel's really struggling right now. He got called out by his coach straight up in front of everybody. Logan Thompson has taken a bit of a step back from his wickedly hot start to the season. But the thing is that now with Mark Stone on LTIR, and with the way that this front office is, because they will not shoulder two straight seasons out of the playoffs.
Right.
With the money they're spending on this roster, with the expectations they've set, and with the talent in-house, there's no way. I would, like, now that you have Mark Stone, you can put him on LTIR, that opens up some space. I think Vegas squeaks in just on the mere fact that I expect them to make a big splash at the deadline.
Patrick Kane.
Exactly. I expect them to go out and, like, just blow everyone's socks off and get Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
Or get, like, Vladimir Tarasenko.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, stuff like that.
And speaking
of which, the St. Louis Blues, we didn't even include them in this conversation because they have 49 points. They, like, Doug Armstrong needs to stop looking around and, you know, like you know, judging whether or not we can make a run here. You can't make a run here. It's done. So start selling. But yes, I think I got to take Colorado, and then I got to take Colorado and then Edmonton. Like, the fact that Edmonton with McDavid and Draisaitl is going to get in a wild card is nuts to me. But
so you think Vegas will get in?
Yes, I do think Vegas is going to get in. I think that, A, they have a good team just in general. Yeah. They are struggling a bit, but they do have a good team in general. And I think they go out and get, like, an impact forward or someone at the deadline. But who knows? Like, I'm extremely excited to see how this plays out.
It's going
to
be a fun one.
This is one of the best stretch drives we've seen in years.
Yeah.
Like, this is great. Who do you think finishes at, like, dead last in the NHL? Because this, you know, we talked about the teams that might make it.
Yeah.
Who's the worst of the bunch? Who's the basement dweller here?
I feel like it's going to be Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And Chicago is the other sort of obvious candidate.
Yeah.
But, maybe this is kind of backwards logic, but if the Hawks trade Kane and or Taves.
I'm excited to see where this goes.
Yeah.
It's going to be good for them.
I think it's going to be, it's not going to be good for them in that sense, but I think that with them gone, you're going to see guys get opportunities.
Yeah.
And when guys are playing for opportunities, they got to be, you know, they're going to give their best. It's basically an open audition.
Mm-hmm.
You might see the Hawks get some unexpected wins down the stretch.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, what do we see from Lucas Reichel, for example?
That's a great question.
Right? Whereas Columbus, it's not that the roster is bad, it's that the roster is so injured.
Yes.
And then they just lost Gustav Nyquist.
Another guy.
Right? So it's like it's not stopping in Columbus. So it's not like they have guys to call up that they've been like holding down there. It's basically been all hands on deck. So for Columbus, this is just like an annus horribilis that they'll want to forget. The team's trying, they just, you know, it's all like held together by popsicle sticks right now. So Chicago, I feel like they could get a bit of a dead cat bounce, like a nobody believes in us, like, you know, like somebody will come up and have some weird point run, or, you know, like they'll get a goalie that goes on a wild run. So I feel like Columbus is going to finish dead last because They're not trying to be bad.
Yeah,
it's just the circumstances dictate that they're going to struggle.
Look, I agree. Right now, Chicago and Columbus are tied, 34 points. Mm. That's abysmal, and they're fighting it out. I do think it'll be one of those two. I mean, obviously they're the two worst teams in the league right now. They, you know, like both of them are going to, already Columbus has a ton of elite talent out or high end talent out, and Chicago is going to trade out that elite talent. I do think it'll be Chicago just because of two words, Peter Mrazek. Guys are going to be playing for opportunities, yes, and Peter Mrazek is going to be trying his absolute best, and when he does that, he tends to let in a lot of goals. And I no disrespect to Peter, the fact that he's still playing hockey at this point is remarkable, considering how many times it seems like his groin has been put into a blender.
Totally.
So good on him. But I do think that Chicago, just with the absolute like dearth of talent that they have, like especially if you like if you looked at those line rushes when I believe it was when Taves was out, he was hurt. It was Jason Dickinson was their first line center. And at the end of the day, at least they, at least Columbus still has, you know, Johnny Gaudreau.
Right.
They still have Patrick Laine. You know, they still have, and look, has Merzlikins been great? No, but at least he can stop the occasional puck, and they can call up David Yurecek if they want. Really get that. I do. I think that, I think Chicago just has, like, they did this on purpose. And then you take the two arguably, like, best players on your, not arguably, the two best players on your roster out of the equation at the same time, and you likely don't get a roster piece back for that, either of them. You're likely only getting futures and prospects.
Right.
I think that's going to be, a tank job that's going to be tough to compete with.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right, you want to do some you want to do some trophy watches?
Let's do some trophy watches.
You want to think, get a little funky? Do some trophy. Okay, yeah. who's your pick for the Hart?
I mean, it's Connor McDavid. It's the obvious answer. Because I do think the Oilers will make the playoffs. And you know what? It's like it's to the point now where McDavid is so dominant that if they didn't make the playoffs, I would seriously have to consider revisiting my policy that a Hart Trophy winner has to make the playoffs because otherwise what value do you have? Like, he's going to get 60 goals easy this year.
Oh, yeah.
He might get 65.
He, like, there's a bet. There are bets now on, like, sites and whatnot. BetMGM, I'm assuming, is one of them.
Yeah.
For him to get 70.
Honestly, I mean, he's almost a goal per game player right now. And, again, as you were mentioning, down the stretch, if they need to win games, you know, 7-6, then you've got the guys to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
He's one of them. He's 19 points clear of Nikita Kucherov. Draisaitl has more points than Kucherov, but obviously, you know, like, they're teammates. And with that power play, it's pretty obvious why they both have a ton of points. But 19 points clear of the next opponent in the NHL.
Yeah.
That's just wild to me.
Yeah, I can't pick anyone else other than Connor McDavid. Like, it just, like, any other selection is, I don't know, man.
Overthinking
it. It seems to be overthinking it. The only person that I can possibly even get close to with that is, and our producer, our lovely producer, Connor Somerville, has texted me that Tage Thompson should be his Hart Trophy candidate. I think that's a lovely idea.
Yeah, it's
incorrect, but it's lovely.
Yeah, it's intriguing.
Connor.
Yeah.
And the only Connor also just flipped me off behind the camera. Lovely. The only and another if I were to that's what we do. That's the professional production we got going on in the Hockey News Studios. But the only other guy I can maybe think of, and I don't think, again, this is, you know, like it's just dumb because he has an incredible team in front of him and everything, but maybe Linus Allmark. Just because of his numbers and the fact that he's a goalie. And he is, you know, he's just, like, if you look at anything, you know, goalie point shares, you know, goals allowed, adjusted, all that. It's just straight up save percentage. He's at 937.
Yeah.
You know, like, he could finish in the 940. It's nuts. But, yeah, Connor McDavid. All right.
Yeah.
Norris.
Okay, so I'm going to go with Rasmus Dahlin on this one. Now, Erik Karlsson leads the NHL in points by defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also a -2.
Yes.
And
he plays on a terrible team.
And he plays on a terrible team. Mm-hmm. So it's like it doesn't really matter. It's impressive.
Yes.
And I'm so happy for Erik Karlsson that his career has rebounded.
Finally. Oh. Hockey is a better place than Erik Karlsson is cooking, you know?
Certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly. Especially in that beautiful teal uniform.
Oh, they're so good.
They're so good. I know. Especially with the helmets.
And even the seals, like the Golden Seals reverse retros with the sharks.
Yeah. Number one.
Incredible.
Yeah. But Rasmus Dahlin is putting up the points, great possession numbers, obviously, you know, a team that has become relevant, you know, playoff bubble, but he has been a big part of that, especially because he got off to such a hot start. So that put them in a good spot where when they did struggle, it wasn't the death knell of their season, which we have seen in the past. Obviously, I put Josh Morrissey in that category
Absolutely.
As well, but I'm going to go with the young buck, Rasmus Dahlin.
I'm going to go with Adam Fox.
Okay.
I think Adam Fox has had. We are not talking nearly enough about the season that Adam Fox is having.
That's fair.
His defensive numbers have spiked like crazy. Like, he is becoming that just like that foundational, like the kind of defense we talk about Cale Makar being,
right.
Where he can just kind of do everything well.
Yeah.
And that's what Adam Fox is doing. You know, he is leading the way. On New York from the back end, even, you know, he's becoming a great sort of like all multi-purpose thing. He's got the points and he's got the defensive acumen, I think, this season, and he's just logging a ton of minutes. I think he's great. I mean, look, I completely respect your opinion, Ryan. You know, it's your democratic right to.
Yeah.
I just happen to think Adam Fox, but look, we're splitting hairs here. We're splitting hairs here. There are, like, Dahlin is having an incredible season. It's great for the league that Dahlin's having an incredible season.
Yeah.
And giving him a Norris right now could, like, crown him as the next new guy, and it could mm-hmm. really send him to another stratosphere. But I just think Adam Fox, I mean, he's doing such a great job. He's really, like, you know, he's improved his defensive game leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
I really like it. So I'm going with that. All right, let's talk about Selke.
Yeah. So my answer's super boring.
Mm-hmm.
It's Patrice Bergeron.
Yes.
But he's only been on the ice for 10 even strength goals against all season.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's super impressive. I mean, if you're talking about defensive forwards, you know, you want to be that shutdown guy. And, you know, he is on the best team in the league, but he is a big reason why they are the best team in the league. And, yeah, I'm sorry to be boring, but by that metric, I mean, you just can't mess with him.
Yeah, it's tough to go against anyone. Like, it's tough to go against Patrice Bergeron. Like,
yeah.
He's doing such a great job. I would love, in a perfect world, for a winger to win this one time.
And Matthew Tkachuk would be the option for me.
Yes, Matthew Tkachuk. We just because Florida is struggling so much, we don't talk about the fact that Matthew Tkachuk is on. He's got 70 points in like 50 something games.
Yeah, and another like possession beast.
Possession beast. Yeah. Great two-way guy. Like he is like. Both teams have kind of gone in their separate dips, but Matthew Tkachuk, like, they won that trade, I think. Like Florida, like. If you look at the way that he has performed, it's incredible. I would love it for a winger, because that's all we do. We only give it to centers, you know. The centers who are like deep, like good defensively, but also chip in offense every once in a while. Yeah. Matthew Tkachuk is like an elite offensive winger who is also being an incredible defensive forward.
Yeah.
I would like to choose him, but like, man, how does Patrice Bergeron do this? Like, he was contemplating retirement.
I know.
Incredible. I can't choose against it. It's a bummer. All right. Let's go to the Calder.
Yes.
One of the more open, wide open races, I think. There's a lot of candidates here.
Yeah.
I mean, the prospective number one is Matty Beniers, obviously.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with Matty Beniers, especially because if you look at that Seattle roster, and they did add more talent over the summer, but they desperately needed help at center.
Yes.
And he has delivered, if not, you know, more so than expected. Again, too bad that he missed the All-Star weekend due to injury, but... I mean, this kid does it all, and he's doing it at a high level. So for me, right now, it's Matty Beniers.
I do think Matty Beniers as well. What I would say is, if Vegas makes the playoffs, it's Logan Thompson for me.
That's fair.
Because Logan Thompson has come in, and, like, yes, he's 25, but, I mean, you know.
Still counts.
It's within the rules.
That's right.
They gave it to Artemi Panarin, who, like, you know, had a 401k and a mortgage.
Right.
And, like, you know, it was, like, Logan Thompson has come in, and taken over a number one job that was held by first Marc-Andre Fleury and then Robin Lehner.
Yeah.
You know, like, those are huge skates to fill, if you will, pads to fill. And he's done a great job. He still has a 9-13. They've dipped a bit, but, like, that's just because everyone around him has gotten injured.
Yeah.
And he's standing on his head. I think he's doing great. If Vegas ends up making the playoffs, it's going to be a big chunk of that. It's going to be because of Logan Thompson. And I think that, you know, like, just being a number one goaltender in the NHL is arguably the hardest thing to do
certainly
on
is.
The ice. And he's doing it as a rookie. I think it's great. That is going to be my choice. As of right now, obviously, I think Matty Beniers, just because he looks like that star that Seattle can build around forever. And the fact that was their first draft pick and they friggin' nailed it
bat
is fantastic. But I Logan Thompson, just to be different.
Exactly.
Just to be devil's advocate.
To throw some other names.
Just to be every guy in my political science tutorials ever, I'm going to be devil's advocate.
Actually, the color.
Exactly. I'm going to bring, like I said, bring a briefcase to school, you know, wear a fedora. It's going to be great. All right. The Vezina. Is there a point in talking about this?
I mean, yeah. Linus Ullmark, he's been everything for the Bruins. Mm. It's amazing to me, too, like, you go back to last year, and I think coming into the summer, it's like, ooh, is it Jeremy Swayman's crease?
Yeah.
Ullmark has just, like,
where did this come from?
Smashed it.
Where, like, he was always good. I watched him a lot in the AHL when I was covering the Marlies, like, because that was right around his prime developmental time.
Yeah.
He was always a highly touted prospect in that regard. Where did the 940 save percentage come from?
Totally, yeah. And, I mean, a lot of it is just sort of confidence, and, you know, he's got the size. And he does have a good team in front of him, but, you know, it's, and it's funny talking to him at the All-Star game, he's saying like, I didn't do a lot different in the summer. It was just kind of like little tweaks here and there. But when you have so much potential, it's, maybe that's just what it is. It's just sort of finding your groove and, you know, having that great communication with your teammates, you know, having that great culture in Boston where, you know, it's so supportive. Mm-hmm. And he's just flourished. And yeah, I mean, the numbers are incredible.
Yeah. They speak for themselves. All right. I think the only person I would challenge is Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, that was the other name I was thinking of.
Connor Hellebuck has had such a good season this year. He doesn't have the team in front of him that Linus Allmark does. Mm. If you look at his goalie point shares, it's actually higher than Allmark, which means he's helped, you know, them produce more points in the standings.
Right.
But like, dude, how are you gonna look at a goaltender who could finish in 940 and be like, yeah, he's not. No. Yeah. On the President's Trophy winning team. Incredible. All right, a very interesting one. Jack Adams.
Yes.
Now I want to make this. I want to put a like sort of a disclaimer here. Mm. I don't want us to just make this the award of the coach of the team we didn't expect to do that well,
right,
but ended up doing well. Right. That's what it is.
Yes. That's what it turns out to be. So I am going a different way. I'm going with Rick Bowness with Winnipeg. I guess expectations weren't super high, but if you look at that roster, you'd be like, they should win.
Yeah.
And he has found the formula. They've been one of the best teams in the division all season long. You know, he's really unlocked Josh Morrissey. And again, talking to Josh Morrissey at the All-Star break, you know, he was saying, like, it's the structure that has allowed him to put up the points he has and to succeed the way he has. Just the little, you know, the tweaks and the new system that Bonus has put in Winnipeg has really allowed Morrissey to activate more and to get the best out of it, to be the best defenseman he can be. And I think, you know, you see it overall with the Jets where they've just been so good this season with basically the same roster they had last year. So what does it come down to? For me, it comes down to coaching.
Yeah, I think it's great. In my opinion, you know, obviously Jim Montgomery's got to be in that conversation because, you know, he did a great job in Dallas. Obviously, personal issues got in the way there. Mm-hmm. And then he did the work. He went to, he went to St. Louis. He, you know, plied his trade as a, you know, as an assistant coach, comes into Boston and has seemingly unlocked them. But the one thing I will say, though, is that it seemed like that group needed a different voice so badly.
Yes.
That I wonder if you just injected anyone in there. You know, like they could at least, you know, have improved, maybe not to the extent that they have.
Right.
But at least like done better. Mine is very interesting. People are gonna, you know, like say it's recency bias or local bias, Sheldon Keefe.
Really?
Yeah. I think any other team, any other coach of a team who has lost basically their entire top four for long stretches of the season, whose superstar is out for the next 3 weeks. Who have been without really key, like think about it. Let's imagine Rick Bowness, for example. He's coaching the Jets, and you know I'm trying to think of even who their top four defensemen are. But like Josh Morrissey misses like 30 games, like Morgan Rielly did, and you know Neil Pionk then misses like 25 games in two separate stretches, like TJ Brody did, and then I don't know, like whoever their other, like Nate Schmidt is just out for the year after the first game. And then, you know, like, and they end up having to put like Victor Mete and Jordy Benn and Mac Hollowell and call up, you know, like Philip Kroll for a game or, you know, and just, it's like everyone that they have tried, credit to the players, but I think that being able to not just keep the team afloat, but like have them on pace for the best season in franchise history. If it wasn't for this Bruins team that is just blowing everyone out of the water, they would be the President's Trophy favorites right now. I think Keith does not get his credit, like enough credit at all, especially because after the first 10 games, people were calling for his head, you know? Yeah. And he seems like he is doing he's putting every player in a great position. The Leafs are playing phenomenal hockey. And he's done it while he was playing, you know, 39-year-old Mark Giordano, like 26 minutes a night for like a solid 15-game stretch to start the season. No, like if any other coach in the league had to go through what he has by losing, like I said, three of his top four defensemen for like, and not just for a little bit, for long stretches. Keep in mind also, Rasmus Sandin has gone down for extended stretches, you know, like stuff like that. It had to plug those guys in and make it work. And then on top of that, in the forward core, they've had to plug in a ton of players up front. you know, like it, I don't, I think it's credit to the players, but like Bobby McMahon has looked like an NHL player when he stepped into the lineup. Pontus Holmberg has become an incredible, like, I think that is just due to, you know, a coach knowing how to play this lineup. I would give it to Sheldon Keefe. I think he's done a phenomenal job, and like no one's gonna give it to him because he lives because he coaches in Toronto. But I think any other team goes through these trials and tribulations, we're just ready to throw his flowers at him. Keefe deserves those, I think.
All right, it's an interesting case.
And the Lady Bing.
Yeah, so I tossed this one in because we never, no one ever predicts the Lady Bing. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me because I feel like when I do my ballot, it's the one where nobody really jumps to mind. Like, you do have to research and be like, okay, like, who has been, you know, a good player and clean? Mm-hmm. And he has won it once in the past. I'm going with Alexander Barkov, the Florida Panthers. He has one penalty.
That's insane.
All season. And he does so as a number one center, as a two-way center. So, you know, this is not a guy that's floating around the rink. This is this is a guy that is playing defense and, you know, playing in all situations, only two penalty minutes, plays at a high level, so for me, it's Barkov.
I can do the same thing for Braden Point.
You can.
Yeah, 55 points, 29 goals, 26 assists, 55 points, 49 games. He's logging almost like 1947 nights, so basically 20 minutes per night.
Yep.
He has two penalty minutes all season.
Yep.
On a Tampa Bay team that, you know, is still rolling along. And that is just so hard to do. Just not to take a penalty, like, by accident.
Exactly.
Like, just, you know, you, like, a guy.
You have to be aware of where your stick is at
all times. Where your body is at all times. Where your feet are at all times. And for a guy who, and this is exactly, like, he's just the exact same thing. Everything you said for Barkov goes to top line center, you know, like, offensive dynamo. He's outproducing Barkov, I think. So, like, just, yeah, good for those two. They're clean fellas, clean boys, as I like to call them. All right, well, that brings us to rapid fire.
Let's do
and
it.
And I have rapid fire again because you covered for two.
Yeah.
So I'm doing one. Obviously, you know, you like to do the music. I like to do the movies. Mm. I'm going to do one. So one thing I like to do right after I see a movie that I really enjoy is, and this is just me being, you know, an impressionable young boy, is I immediately download that character's personality and I become that person.
Interesting.
You know, like, this happens to everyone, you know, they, you know, you come out of a movie, usually with Ryan Gosling, and you're like, I am him. I am cool, you know,
right.
Like all that. And what I would like to know, Ryan, is, you know, whether it can be as a kid, whether it can be as an adult, you never know when this is going to happen.
Uh-huh.
What was like the first movie that you can remember where you watch that movie and you're like, I am that main character?
Ooh, interesting. Yeah, because, like, when I was, like, a little kid, but this is before the Spider-Man movies, like, this is just when I was a cartoon.
Yes.
I would just, like, jump on the hood of the family
car. Oh, of course.
In the garage. I mean, I guess the one that always resonates with me is, like, but it's based on a real person, is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And it's, like, but ironically, none of the drug stuff, because, like, I don't do drugs. But just that, like,
weird flex, but okay.
Yeah, weird flex. Yeah. Yeah, that was like the character where it's like, yeah, like just the writing,
yeah,
and like going out and getting just sort of like stories and looking at them in different ways and having fun in the process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the one that always like resonated with me was Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah. Oh, and that's as a journalist, I think that's a great way to do it. I mean, obviously, like, not the first one for me, but, like, you know, obviously, Robert Pattinson's Batman. Like, I walked out of that movie, and I'm like...
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, crazy, right?
Yeah,
I've never, you know, it's just a weird little factoid about me. Wow. I walked out of that movie, and I was like, Thursday, October 31st, the streets are packed for the holidays. And I'm like, I can do that entire monologue. Another one that I remember in high school was, like, Ryan Gosling's character from Drive.
Oh yeah,
that's what everyone does. We're like, he's got the sick like scorpion jacket. And
but
he never talks, and everyone's like strong, silent type.
Right.
I mean, Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man. Like, as a kid, I remember after watching that movie, my dad driving me home, and I'm looking out the window, and I'm imagining Spider-Man just swinging from car to car.
Mm.
Like, that's number. You know, he's relatable. You know, he's a loser like I am. Like, you know, it's great stuff. What is, another one is, so every, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but every Christmas, my family has a tradition where we watch Christmas with the Cranks, the movie with Tim Allen and Jamie Lee Curtis, who was actually my biological mother, if you didn't know. And objectively, it's a bad movie.
Okay.
We love it. It's a lot of fun to laugh at.
Yeah.
Brings us to guilty pleasures. What is your guilty pleasure movie? Like a movie that if you say, if you said, you know, in a public square, I like this movie, you would get tomatoes thrown at you. Oh. But you just unabashedly love it.
Okay. Guilty pleasures. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I don't know if this is a guilty pleasure or not, because it's kind of a cult classic, but, like, I recently rewatched Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah.
And that would probably be, like, the sixth or seventh time I've watched it. I just think it's a, like, super smart film, and it's great cast, you know? Alan Cumming and Parker Posey as the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Great cameos, just a lot of fun. So, I mean, if you haven't seen it, then you might think, like, why? But, yeah, I just think it's a super, like, and it's not even, like, subtle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, like, the whole joke is, like, right in front of me the whole time, but yeah, I feel it doesn't get the props it deserves.
Yeah, you know, I've heard, like, I haven't seen it personally, but it's in the world of, like, memes and Tumblr and stuff,
yeah.
Like, I feel like that was really sort of latched onto.
Yes.
For me, it is, I think, it, like, it wasn't, like, badly reviewed or anything. It was like, sort of like a 60, 65% Rotten Tomatoes. But the movie, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates.
Oh, yeah.
It's got, you know, like, Adam Devine and Zac Efron. That movie is hilarious.
Yeah, it's
that
good.
Movie is so funny. It's way funnier than it has any right to be at all. It is, like, just... I think it's the best use, because I think Adam Devine is fine, but like, or Devine, however you want to call it, is fine. But like, he's very much like a one pitch pitcher, like a one note kind of guy.
Yep.
And I think that movie just uses it so perfectly.
Yeah.
Like it puts him in a position. It's like the Bill Belichick, you know,
it
puts him in that system where it just works so well. I love that. I think that movie is hilarious. It does not get nearly enough the credit it deserves. And people can go and look at that and be like, what, that, like, comedy, it's fine, like, whatever. Nah, watch it again. It's very funny.
Fair enough.
All right, and then finally, who is, so we you know, months ago, you said, you know, like, had you watched Don't Worry, Darling? And
right.
I hadn't, and now finally I was able to support my wife, Florence Pugh, and watch it on the plane back.
Yeah.
And so it had the payoff was a little weak, I'd say, you know, like, like we talked about it, like, speaking of mid, that movie is, I would say mid,
right.
like very well acted, I think, from certain people, but the payoff is tough. What is a movie that you have watched where, like, it just, you walked out of the theater mad, or you, not even the theater, like,
right.
you just walked away mad? Because I feel like a lot of people spent, you know, 2 hours in that movie being like, this is weird. Everything's, there's building up. There's like ballerina dancers in black and white. What's going on? And at the end, it's like, oh, it was a simulation. You know, people are like, what? You know, what's a movie that, like, at the end of it, you're like, what the heck, man?
All right. So there was a movie that came out on Netflix not long ago. Athena. It's a French movie.
Okay.
And it's about, like, a riot that breaks out. And the first, like, half of it is amazing. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen. And then when it gets to the ending, I felt like they sold out so bad that I was like, that was like, I was like, that's terrible. Like, it was just like such a cop-out ending where it's like, you guys had this awesome, like, you know, super political, like, socio-cultural movie. Mm-hmm. And then you were just like, we don't want to make anybody mad. So I'm not spoiling it, but I thought that was, like, just, like, the most, like, soft, like, sellout ending possible. So I was mad about that because I was really looking forward to the movie because it's gorgeous and it can be really intense, and it was for most of it, but then the ending, I was just like, no.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple, like, there's some superhero movies where, you know, I've watched them and I'm like, this is a really good premise. And at the end, I'm just like, oh, really? It's this again? Like, there are a lot of Marvel movies where, like, I think they do a great job in establishing the characters and everything, the first two acts. And in the end, it's just a guy fights a guy who looks like him. Like, you know, and, like, for example, I love the movie Black Panther.
Yep.
I think it's, you know, phenomenal, incredibly acted. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever secured Marvel's first acting Oscar nomination. And it was incredibly deserved.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the final battle is, like, it looks like a PlayStation 2 cutscene. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, these two dudes, like, it's just Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan's, their avatars, I guess. They're sim characters, if you will. Just, like, wailing on each other. One that really, everything after that, though, was beautiful, I think. Like, you know, but just like that, I'm like, really, that's it? They look the same, like, whatever. One that really annoyed me, though, is, because, like, Black Mirror is, it's not a movie, but Black Mirror, you ever watch? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah. So, what really annoyed me was Bandersnatch.
The interactive one.
The interactive one, the choose your own adventure one. Yeah. Because they really do a good job of, like, seeding in, like, these weird moments, this guy losing his mind. Mm-hmm. And then I feel, and I tried to get every potential combination.
Yeah.
And all of them were just like, what? Like, yeah. It just, like, I'm like, I spent so much time and effort, like, clicking this, like, and, like, thought, being like, okay, but if I choose this and this, like, the first time I did it, I was like, okay, I'm gonna try and galaxy brain this.
Yeah.
Because you give an option where Will Poulter's character is like, I'm gonna jump off this roof. Uh-huh. And you're like, okay. Or no, you are like, I'm gonna jump off this, he's daring you to do it. And I'm like, the obvious answer would be to not jump off the roof, right?
Right.
But then I'm like, but this is Black Mirror. Anything can happen. So I'm gonna jump off the roof. I died and it ended. It was like 15 minutes long and I'm like, what was the, and so I had to restart it, watch everything that I watched up to that, like it was, that I think it was a great idea. It pissed me off to no end.
Fair enough. That's when I feel that's when that show jumped the shark. Yeah. The next season was garbage.
Well, it's, you know, what if society was a phone?
Yeah.
You know, that's the
technology. But the first seasons are amazing.
Oh, dude. Shut Up and Dance?
Yeah.
You know what? My rapid fire next time is going to be all Black Mirror themed because I want to get your opinions on it. But that will be next show because we've reached the end of it. If you want to watch this podcast or any past episodes of this podcast or any other lovely Hockey News podcasts we have going on here, you can go to hockeynews.com/podcasts, find all our archives there. And Ryan, we will be back next week to talk more hockey and then Black Mirror probably.
Probably.